DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by Terry Polakovic, who is one of the co-founders of Endow, educating on the nature and dignity of women, and has served as the president of the organization from 2003 to 2015. She's worked in a nonprofit leadership for more than 30 years and is now retired. In 2010, she received the Pro Ecclesia et Pontifice Cross Award from Pope Benedict XVI. In 2011, Terry was recognized as an outstanding Catholic leader by the Catholic Leadership Institute. With Terry Polakovic, we go inside the pages of Life and Love, Opening Your Heart to God's Design, published by Our Sunday Visitor. Terry, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you, Chris, for inviting me. I'm really happy, pleased to be on your program.
Life and Love, Opening Your Heart to God's Design, I think is a very special book for a multiplicity of reasons. And we'll go more into it. But first, I want to know, what compelled you to kind of put all of this together?
You know, I guess my first thought was, you know, it's the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. And this is the first time I wrote books for Endow, for our study guides, but it's the first time I've ever had a book published officially. And so I was trying to think about something around that subject. And then the other thing that I kind of tied into it, someone once told me that you don't really even need to read a history book. You can just look at the church's teachings and know what's going on in the culture. And I always found that idea just fascinating. It's true, totally true, but I never had looked at it from that perspective. So that's what I just thought I would do. I was trying to, you know, just like look and see what came before Humanae Vitae and what has followed it. And why is it only Humanae Vitae that has raised so many problems? And so that's where I came from. I just wanted to see. I wanted to see who the other popes were, what the encyclicals were, and, you know, the culture of the time. And so anyway, that's the gist of the book. I have to say one thing. I loved writing about the encyclicals. I loved writing about the culture, but I loved writing about the popes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tried to put them as just individual people who happened to be at this moment in time, and I found them fascinating.
They are an incredible group of men that you pulled together here, holy fathers that really had their finger on the pulse, but I think they really saw with the eyes of their heart what was happening in the world, don't you?
I do, totally. I felt like they totally came across as pastors, mm-hmm. as shepherds, not the least bit legalistic. I just never found that in any of their writings. Some of their writings are more difficult to read, more concrete, if you will, compared to John Paul II, who's very, you know, flowery and beautiful and all that. Mm-hmm. But nothing, I never found that what people, I think, imagine that the church is like, you know, holding the gavel and is like, this is it, you know, that type of thing. I always felt like they went for the heart of the people. And when the people were straying, they just tried to bring them back on track. It was a beautiful way to look at them.
I'm glad you brought forward the work of Pope Leo XIII. He's a personal hero of mine.
I love him.
Yeah, me too. A little guy who with an incredibly huge heart and brain. Now, why isn't he a saint yet? I mean, Terry, let's...
Okay, I've asked so many people that. Why is that? How can that be? I mean, he was so... I mean, I think he wrote like 90 encyclicals or 90 different documents. Mm-hmm. I mean, and, you know, it was during the Industrial Revolution and the beginning of socialism and all that kind of stuff. I mean, he was it. And I'm just so surprised he's never been brought forth.
Yeah, let's talk about that it. I mean, he was it. He was, well, should we say he was the one who had an incredible encounter with two saints that I can think of right off the top of my head. One was a little girl named Therese, who threw a tantrum at his feet. And then another one was a rich millionaire who tried to tell him what to do, and he ended up changing her life forever.
Exactly. So was at St. Catherine Drexel. I do remember the story of her just going and, you know, asking, you know, what she can do, and him telling her to found an order, to mm-hmm. give up everything and found her own order.
He was the Pope during the time of all the isms, wasn't he? I mean, whether it was
right.
the founding of thoughts of Marxism and evolutionism and you name it. And he was having to deal with it.
He was, and you know, he predicted exactly the whole church-state thing, which is exactly where we are now, you know, regarding marriage, that, you know, you would be married first by the state, and then, you know, incidentally by the church, and that eventually that would go away, the church wedding would go away, and I feel like that's exactly what's, you know, where we are right now.
Well,
I feel like he was predicted everything.
Well, he really did. I mean, the thing is you said the times were changing, and dramatically so. This was the time of urbanization, the Industrial Revolution, and
right.
that was changing the whole landscape of the world in really incredible ways, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just one of the things I found really interesting, and I had never really read about the Industrial Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now we have the benefit of the Industrial Revolution, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really, and I know there's been many books about it. I think one is called The Jungle, about the people, you know, how they suffered through that, how it was good, but also really torturous for a lot of those people. I mean, you know, and that's where he wrote, I think, Rerum. What is that?
Rerum Novarum.
Yes.
Yeah,
talk about the conditions of the working conditions of the people. So he was everywhere. I mean, he was just on the front of every issue, I felt. I could have done the whole book about him. In fact, I just loved him. And interestingly, I couldn't really find, I mean, I really dug deep to try and find more information on him. And I found plenty, but I would have loved to have found more. Like, who is he? Tell me more. There isn't as much as you would think written about him. And again, he's not a saint.
Yeah, isn't that remarkable? I mean, the next time you're in Rome, I'm sure you probably have already seen it. He is at St. John Lateran, right?
Oh, he is.
Yeah, right near the altar of the Last Supper. And that it's way in the back, but he's up there, way up above a doorway. This incredible image of him, it seems fitting that he would be in the church of the Bishop of Rome and,
yeah.
you know, that
wow.
ancient church. What you did in the book, which I have to say is a wonderful book, not only to read for your own personal edification, but I love the way you've designed it so that the individual as well as groups could go back and to, like I said, read for your own edification, but then also go through and kind of challenge yourself with the various questions so that it sinks in a little bit deeper.
Right, right. When I was writing it, I was actually doing it with a group of women that we've been together for a long time, and so they were kind of my guinea pigs. And we loved reading the book together. It brought up so much conversation. I mean, our meetings would always go long, not because, you know, I mean, but just because of the conversation. People did not want to stop. It was just very interesting to do it with a group.
In his particular encyclical, he talks about some of the concerns that he has because of that secularization
right.
of marriage. And he was so prophetic, was he not? Especially when it comes to the rise of the number of lawful divorces.
Right.
And the way that we look at marriage and how we look at divorce, that was going to have severe ramifications on that central core of the family, would it not?
Yes, definitely. I mean, absolutely. And one of the things he said, which I just thought was beautiful, is that, you know, at some point you have to stop looking at each other and look to God. I mean, you know, it appears that you just cannot solve it. You cannot solve the issues in your marriage. And so the point is then, and all along you should be looking to God, but the way he put it is that, you know, that's the only solution. If you look to God, he will provide the solution, you know. And I have found that true in my own marriage, and I know that's true of many people, you know, that at some point you just, you need help, and
mm-hmm.
it's not a human thing.
Mm-hmm. I wish we had more time for Pope Leo. Maybe you'll be able to do a book on him sometime. You can go out and
oh,
do
I'd
some more
it.
Research on him. because there's so much there. But then we move towards to another pope that, again, very many people may not be very aware of, but he had another prophetic voice, and that was Pius XI and Consti Canubi.
Right, and I think that document is beautiful. I really do. If anyone hasn't read it, or I'm sure many people have not read it, it's worth a read. I mean, I think he lays out beautifully the responsibilities of marriage, what it is, God's the partner in marriage. I mean, everything. I thought he just laid it, and you know, children, the whole bit. I thought, and so in a way, it was a perfect follow up, really, even though it was many years later, to Arcanum. I mean, but again, he's reading the signs of the times. It's in the 20s. It's really a very promiscuous time between the two wars, the First and Second World War. And also, it's the beginning of Margaret Sanger and her birth control league. And so what he does is he just reinforces what the church teaches. And then also, all the churches, the Anglican Church, and then followed by all the Protestant churches, began to accept contraception. Started it out under certain conditions, but of course it's widespread now. So he just saw it all. I mean, from this perspective, it seems very interesting. But I know from that time, it must have been incredibly challenging. You just would have to be on your knees all the time wondering, you know, where is the world going, basically. But I found him interesting.
He really was, as you said, in that particular period, and this is the 1930s, essentially, when this is all starting to take place. Christian churches, aside from at least the Roman Catholic Church, I'm not sure about the Orthodox Church, but Protestant churches began to change their traditional teachings on birth control. Now, so you have Pope Leo XIII addressing, watch out, marriage is under attack. All these circumstances are creating this perfect storm. And now you have Pius XI, who, with this induction of this chemical birth control, now, which people like, here's her name, Margaret Sanger, who today still is a hero figure for many people.
Oh, I know.
Isn't that remarkable?
Oh, it's remarkable. We have an all-girls Catholic school here in town. You walk in, and on one wall are all, like, women heroes, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt and all that kind of stuff, and Margaret Sanger is right on the wall.
And a proud eugenicist.
Oh, yeah.
It's shocking and horrific when you read her early writings in the magazine she published on birth control. She called it birth control.
Right.
Because she thought that there were those individuals in our society who were uniquely unfit to help foster the advance of the human culture, so they need to be eradicated. How shocking is that?
Right. And now birth control is just such a dividing issue. It's just like, it's such a, you know, if you look a little deeper, you think, what is that? I mean, why is it such a stinging issue? I mean, he wrote about it perfectly. I mean, not that, you know, everybody needs to just turn to Pope Pius XI, but it just became and still is the issue that divides the world. The issue that divides the whole world, I think.
One of the reasons why you brought forward your book, and we're very blessed because you were able to pull from the writings to give us examples of how lovely it can be and how Pius XI speaks about the importance of mutual love within the marriage. And it's the love that isn't necessarily always going to be the warm fuzzies, but the love that's a commitment to the commitment. You know, one that will stand no matter what, one that you can depend on. That's a great value, isn't it, Terry?
Hey, I mean, I don't know how you could have a, quote, successful marriage without that. I mean, that has to override. Seriously, I mean, that's the commitment.
And you, as a successful leader for so many years of Endow, a groundbreaking program that has helped to enlighten the hearts and minds and so many women on the teachings and the beauty of that are contained within the tradition of the church. You know, so first, thank you for that. Those programs, it allowed people to really go deep into and explore aspects of our faith. If only we could do that same type of thing, that type of enlightenment for those couples who are entering in to what is I supposed to be, ideally be, that sacramental union that lasts a lifetime.
Right, right.
The same, but unfortunately, a lot of our marriage prep programs, you know, maybe you meet once or twice with Father, you have a marriage prep for the liturgy, you might have a couple of meetings, meaning take some tests, have a couple discussions, and before you know it, I mean, even religious and priests take longer in there before they say yes to their vocation. I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, that's interesting. I think that's very flawed. In fact, my son just got married in March, and that was exactly his experience. And quite frankly, he wanted more. I mean, he was looking for, both of them were looking forward to more. And so, you know, they were a little disappointed. I just wish people would understand the church's wisdom. I mean, why not pay some attention up front? And also, why not befriend the couples so that they have a friend and a priest, you know, that type of thing? Why don't they take time? I know they have no time, but what else could be more important? There's nothing else that could be more important than marrying and baptizing children and, you know, walking with the family and that type of thing. My sister actually has a perfect situation. She lives in Longmont, Colorado, and her priests are wonderful. And they, why let that go with so little? I don't know.
Again, we've just been talking about Pope Pius XI and Consti Canubi, which is of chaste wedlock. Just, I think, Terry, if people could use your book for marriage prep, I think that would be so awesome. I mean, if there could be small groups where the Catholic couples that are preparing were just take some time with the wisdom and to see how marriage moved from one point all the way across the spectrum by the end of a century, and to hear the cry, as well as, again, the wisdom of these leaders of the church, I just think this would be such a benefit.
Yes, I think so too. I'd love that, quite frankly. Anything that to get into their mind and their heart and their soul. I mean, that's the thing I think is missing, particularly in marriage prep, is it didn't touch the heart and soul of my son and his wife. I mean, it was just something they checked off. They did not want to just have it that way, but it turned out to be that way. And that's the time, like, you can really fall in love and make decisions for your family as you're going forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking to Terry Polakovic, who has written a book, Life and Love, Opening Your Heart to God's Design. And it just covers the whole spans of 8 wonderful church documents that pertain to human life and to love. And, of course, we have to talk about Pope Paul VI, soon to be Saint Pope Paul VI, and who wrote the incredible work *Humanae Vitae* of human life. Talk to us about that one, Terry.
This document is very short, and it is. Mm-hmm. I think he has some beautiful reflections. I think the thing that really stood out for me in that document, and it has for many people, is how prophetic he was. I mean, how he just really, point, this will happen. Women will be degraded. Children will be left without families. I mean, just all the kind of stuff that he predicted, it all came true. I think if anyone has any doubt about the teachings of the church, they should look to this document because every single thing came true. Again, with this document, I really took to the person of Paul VI. I just wanted to follow him and see what led you to this. I mean, for your audience, he finished up the Second Vatican Council, and from that council came a commission, what they call the Birth Control Commission. It has a more formal name. But anyway, in that commission, when they finally finished published their final report, they had a majority of report of people who said that the church teaching should change on this issue of contraception. And then they had a minority report of just a few people who said it could not change. Anyway, so he's left to study, and that's all those people were there for. They were not there to make any kind of a ruling or anything like that. They were there to study it for him. So this left him in a position of having to study it himself and go deeper and deeper. I just found him just a compelling character. I mean, I really did. He was complicated, but I read somewhere, and I think I put it in the book, that he could command a room without saying a word. And I guess I never pictured him like that. I pictured him as a small, frail person, and that I didn't picture him as, you know, having such stature that everyone would come to attention when he walks in the room. I think at the end I found him a tragic character. I mean, it just really did. And I think probably he will be remembered as that. He will be remembered as following God's will. I mean, that's it, even at great personal cost.
Well, that's the life of a prophet more often than not. They're the voice crying out and stating essentially not necessarily what's to come, but this is the state of where we're at. And because of where we're at, this is where we're headed. And that's, I think, that everything about Humanae Vitae is you look at the time that it was issued in those late 60s. Now, I was, granted, I was a young girl back then. I mean, very young. But I remember that. And having grown up in the 70s and 80s, everything he said ultimately came to bear, didn't it?
Everything. Every prediction about our culture came to bear. Unfortunately, you know, because we've suffered greatly because of it, because we didn't follow it, because nobody paid attention to it, because it caused a great split in the church. I mean, priests and theologians openly defied him. That's why I think this must be such a hot topic. Well, I read somewhere it was the first time, like I said, priests and theologians ever openly criticized a pope.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was just out in the open and from his own, you know, that type of thing.
Again, when you look at the times, this is a time of great change, and one of that was change in the media. Now you have television, and you have all different kinds of ability to be able to travel the world. I mean, he traveled the world at that time more so than any other pope had ever done.
Right.
And the means of communicating. So you have a lot of people voicing their opinions, putting and pontificating and seeming to be experts because they're wearing a collar and not necessarily speaking with the voice of the church, even though they might be a member of it.
And confusing people so badly. I mean, the confusion that came from that and still comes from that. I mean, quite frankly, still comes from that.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I think it's important, once again, that we have works like yours, Terry, Life and Love, Opening Your Heart to God's Design, so that we can go once again back into these actual teachings of the church. This is the tradition of the church. And to listen to that wisdom, to that guidance that can help us today. It's not too late. You know, It's not too late. And I remember I was a young teenager who got all excited when all of a sudden a non-Italian was named Pope, a Polish Pope, no less, who was so dynamic and had such an outreach and seemed to have such a great love for all of us. And he did it by teaching us so much. And you bring forward his writings as well in the book.
Yes, John Paul II. You know, what is there to say about John Paul II except that you just love him to death? I mean, he's 100% responsible for my own conversion, completely, completely. And I've always been Catholic, but I would say reversion, if you will. He just touched our hearts in such a deep way. It's still a loss for us. I mean, still, the world misses him terribly. But he left behind incredible writings, just incredible. He was an incredible teacher. You know, whatever else was going on in the world at that time, he was a teacher. And he was just, again, another profound person who could stand up and speak the truth and, you know, and defy, you know, the culture. And he was so interesting. One of the things I read about him and I've known for a couple of years is that culture, what drives the world, culture. And at first I didn't understand that. What does that mean? But now I see it more clearly that if you have a sick culture, that's what's driving the world. And we have a sick culture today. And he knew that. But he did everything he could, humanly possible, to change that and to make change available to others. I mean, quite frankly, you know, with his John Paul II Institute and, you know, his encyclicals and other documents on the family, theology of the body. I mean, he just did it all. He left nothing unturned. We could follow him and know everything.
It really is quite wonderful, the three works that you did bring forward, Familiaris Consortio, which is the role of the Christian family in the modern world, which I think every family should go through. I don't think it's that so thick that if you just took it in pieces, that this would be great for Lent or for a time when families gather to reflect, even Advent. And then, of course, Evangelium Vitae, which the gospel of life, it in itself is awesome in so many regards. But why I want to bring this one forward, too, because we don't have as much time as I wished we did. But Mulieris Dignitatum, and I did not know that very well until I went to a Endow sessions on that. Ah. And that was a document that there was a great focus in Endow on the dignity and vocation of women. So thank you very much for that.
Yes, yes. That was our, if you would say, our founding document, if you will, that and John Paul II's letter to women, which is much shorter and easier to read, that type of thing. But that was what the whole program was built upon. And, you know, it's like a little, it's been, you know, since 2003, so I can't exactly remember the sequence of things. But we were very lucky in Endow to have a scholar named Sister Prudence Allen. And she's a philosopher, a world-renowned philosopher. And she took us through many of the documents of John Paul II particularly. And so she taught us Mulieris Dignitatum. And I could see women changing almost daily, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, this feeling like I've never felt this way about myself. I've never understood my own dignity. I've never understood a man's dignity. I've never, you know, it just brings it all out. And I think it's beautiful in the sense that the story that I, you know, introduce it with is that he loved women. I mean, people, again, take that wrong, that he, you know, he's a churchman and that type of thing, but he loved women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just loved women. He wanted the best for them. He knew they were getting destroyed, so.
I'm going to get redundant, but I couldn't agree with you more. So to have your work once again reintroducing us to these important insights, I think is invaluable. And also to bring forward the work of, I miss you, Holy Father, Pope Benedict XVI, now Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI. I could never get enough of his writings. Deus Caritas Est, God is Love, is one of my all-time favorites. So thanks for putting
it's beautiful.
In the book.
Yeah, it's a beautiful. And, you know, he wrote it in from the frame of mind that we live in a world that's lost the meaning of love.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just like a true teacher, he goes back and he begins with Greek writings and that type of thing. And, again, just dissecting the word love, if you will. And then just second part of it is how do you live it in the world? But he's such a clear teacher. It would be hard not to understand what he means because he writes so clearly.
He really does. You just have to take your time. Just don't rush through any of these things. It's just like a good book. If you can rush through it, then there might be a problem there. Words matter. And so people like Pope Benedict XVI, John Paul, Pius XI, Leo XIII, they take care of what they say. And so each word has a meaning. And we don't get enough of that, do we, Terry?
No, we don't. And language, like you say, language matters. I mean, when I first heard that, I couldn't understand what that meant. But I am so clear on it now. Language matters. I mean, what you call something matters. And the idea that you can change the meaning of words, and now they have a new definition, even though your mind always has this other definition. It's just crazy. You just wonder about, you know, the kids now. I mean, yours do. What are they getting?
And the thing, too, of the documents that you've brought forward, and I would say if you read any of their work by any of the popes that you mentioned, that what they present to us with great love. When you read it, there is not an accusatory voice speaking through their work. It is, they'll convict us. They'll once again point and explain, look what's happening in the world. But it's out of an attitude of love. And
Right. You
do pick that up in their writings, don't you?
Oh, you do. You do. Okay, one thing is they challenge you. So it's not easy. I mean, the Catholic faith is not easy. I mean, you have to be willing to be challenged and accept things about yourself that you would rather not accept. So clearly that's in the writings. But at the same time, it's with a parent's hug, kiss, that type of thing. You know, the teachings are very clear, and that's what the church expects of you, and that's what we should expect of ourselves. And that should, I mean, we should be pointing our life to heaven. And so, that's, we all fall, and I think I make that point very well in the book, is that we fall, but still, this is where we're going. This is what we should strive for, that type of thing. And just the popes all do it beautifully. I mean, they love us. Mm-hmm. You can feel the love through every single document. It's a profound letter of love, all of them.
And including the last one that you have in here from a pope, an unexpected pope, but one that challenges us, but I have no doubt loves us, and that's Pope Francis.
I totally agree. I kind of worried as I was going on, like how, you know, there's so much noise and people are talking about the confusion in the church right now and stemming from maybe some of the things he says or writes or this or that. So I was thinking to myself all the way through the book, how will I present that on paper? He's a challenging person. He does want us to be different. I mean, what I thought was kind of interesting, where we were just talking about the nuclear family, he challenges us and says, no, that's not your family. Your family is your neighbor, the people you work with, you know, that type of thing. If they're in trouble, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he made that very clear. And I didn't necessarily get that from the other documents, and I thought, oh, that's really beautiful. Someone actually, when I was writing about this document, said, don't listen to anything. Don't listen to anybody. Don't listen to anything. Just read the document. And in just doing that, I found the document beautiful. Really, I did. I just thought it was beautiful. I told my husband, I said, for all the uproar, this is beautiful. It's mm-hmm. so long, but I found it still so beautiful.
I am very glad that, as I said repeatedly throughout our conversation, that what you've done by compiling them together and also the thoughtful questions that we can ask ourselves, again, it's designed for either individual study or it can be done in group study. And as I mentioned, I hope it's done in marriage preparation courses or even RCIA groups. This is the kind of stuff that challenges us, but also breaks things open for us, Terry. And I'm so glad you did
it. Well, thanks a lot. You know what? It was a complete labor of love. After I left Tindao, I was exhausted, mm-hmm. and it was clearly time that I leave. But then you wonder, you know, what next? What next? And for a year, I just really tended to our home things. I tended to just things that had been pushed aside for so long. And I just kind of mentally, you know, got back on track, if you will. And by that, I mean not the urgent, everything needs to be done right now, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's like when you're, you know, running an apostolate like that. But anyway, then this opportunity came up, and the whole way through, I took a different tack than I had in ever within doubt. I just wanted to praise God with it. I remember in praying, I was like, I don't care. Please don't let me focus on if it's successful, if it's this, if it's that. I want this just to be a work of love. And so I enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed it every single minute of it.
Well,
I love research, so that was fun too.
Well, you certainly can tell. And, I mean, the footnotes alone, thank you. I mean, my goodness. at every aspect of it, it's a wonderful work. And Terry, I do wish we had more time. Any final thoughts?
Thank you for inviting me. I do believe that you could learn something, and I think this book could help you fall in love with the church. Mm. And that's what I would hope. People who read it, I hope they fall either in love or deeper in love with the church.
Well, beautiful. Terry, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate it.
With Terry Polakovic, we've gone inside the pages of Life and Love, Opening Your Heart to God's Design. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to osv.com, the website for its publisher, Our Sunday Visitor, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this episode, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com. Or you can find it on the free app that's available to you at the iTunes or Google Play app stores. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission. And if you feel us worthy, consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we pray that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for Inside the Pages, Insights from Today's Most Compelling Authors.